Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast Extra. This is where we get a chance to talk more in depth with some of our most interesting panelists about their life story, what makes them passionate about politics, who they are. And this week we've got Tommy Lahren here with us. Welcome.
Good to be here.
And she's got a new book. It's called Never Play Dead, How the Truth Makes You Unstoppable. Of course, people know Tommy is really the face of Fox Nation, which is Fox's streaming service. Before that, she was with The Blaze. She was with One American News Network and is one of the most quoted conservative commentators out there. She's got like 5 million followers on Facebook. And of course, she's going to be sharing this out to all of them. Just kidding. So Tommy, welcome. Good to have you. Good to have you with us. And thank you for being on the show. And I guess we said congratulations on the book. And the book's kind of not what some people thought it would be. It's not really a conservative tome of here's why Donald Trump's great and here's why liberals suck. It's more of how you deal with the haters and sort of your life story. So we talked about this a little bit on the TV version of the show, but real bottom line, how do you deal with the haters? Because you say in here, sometimes it hurts.
It does. For me, what hurts more is when I'm attacked by fellow conservatives for not being, quote, conservative enough. Mm-hmm. That's what really hurts. Or when my character is attacked, that hurts. When people attack my politics or they attack my looks or they attack my education, my experience, that doesn't really bother me. I've learned to tune that out. So what I tell people is if I worried about all the nasty things people said about me, I would live in a dark hole in life because there's so much nastiness out there, especially for conservatives on social media. So I don't really pay attention to it, to be quite honest.
You don't, even though you write about at one point you felt like an addict to social media.
I'm an addict to social media in that I use it as a tool. And I love social media. And don't get me wrong, I built my career on social media, largely especially off Facebook videos. So I love social media. But I don't go on and read all the filth. People say, oh, did you see what this person said about you? Not really. I don't really pay attention to a lot of the comments. I pay attention to my fans, my followers, and putting my content out there. But I don't pay attention to all the nastiness that people with, you know, a faceless profile say about me because, quite frankly, I don't really care.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your life story because it's certainly a unconventional life story and sort of blaze your own path because there really was no model for what you have done so far. And you're only like 15, right?
I'm almost 27.
Yeah. So you started in South Dakota, right? That's where you were born.
Born and raised.
Born and raised in South Dakota. Working class family. And you always sort of had this passion for journalism and media. One thing you write about in the book is, this is something that we had in common, you convinced your parents to buy you a camcorder as a young kid because you really wanted to start creating your own content. Talk to us about that.
And I'm an only child as well. Yeah. And we lived kind of out in the country, 12 miles out of town. My friends didn't really want to come out and play. I've always been very independent. It's always been me with adults. And I think that's where I cultivated a lot of my love for politics and just speaking the way that I do is because I was always around adults. But yes, I got the camcorder. I would make cooking shows with my cousins with Play-Doh and record them and watch them back, make my family watch them back. I've always been a performer. But I've also always cared about the issues. I grew up watching the nightly news. It's something that's been always very important to me. And I felt like we in South Dakota, in the Midwest, in Middle America, were forgotten. We were just glazed over because we were in the center of the country. And I wanted to change that. And I felt like I had the voice to do that.
So, and by the way, my sister and I used to do fake talk shows with my camcorder as well and make our family watch it. So we've both been working at this for a while, right? They say we're young, but hey, we've been doing it for many years. When did you know I'm a conservative?
It was never really a moment of I'm a conservative. We're having all these conservatives come out now that are, oh, I used to be a Democrat. Now I'm a conservative and now I'm a Trump supporter. Some of that is probably genuine. Some of that is probably riding on the coattails of what has become kind of a profitable industry to be in, which is media and especially conservative Trump supporting media. That was never me. Like I said, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up with two very hardworking parents who worked very hard for everything that they have. Neither one of my parents went to college. Both of their parents came from very humble beginnings, grew up on ranches and ranched their whole lives. My grandpa only had an eighth grade education. So for me, conservative values weren't so much about being a Republican or who you voted for. It was more about those values that come along with hard work, not taking anything from anybody, and living just a humble lifestyle, which to me is at its core what conservatism is all about.
So you end up going to UNLV in Las Vegas for college. You're in a journalism class and you're supposed to write about something. You ended up writing about stripping as a part-time job. And not me specifically.
No, you
weren't.
Someone else. Yes, let's clarify that.
You ended up profiling other people. What did you think?
Tell me
a little bit about the, because it turned out into sort of one of your first controversies of journalism,
no, it did.
Right?
And, you know, for me, and I've always been this way, if everybody else goes one direction, I go the other. So everyone else was doing campus reporting on the event that was happening, and that's great, but I always wanted to do something a little bigger and a little different. And I thought, I'm in Las Vegas. This is a weird environment. What makes going to school at UNLV so different? Because a lot of my friends that stayed at home in South Dakota, they went to Colorado, they all thought when I went to UNLV that, you know, we went to school in a casino and it was this weird enigma to everybody else. So I thought, well, let's play into that. Let's talk about people that have real careers and real jobs paying for college in the industries that Vegas offers that a lot of other college towns don't offer. So I voiced that I wanted to do this. And not surprisingly, there were people in my class that said, I know someone that does this. And I put the pieces together. And the girl that I actually ended up profiling was an intern for Senator Harry Reid. So that was another element of all of this. But a part of that, and I think what you're talking about, the controversy, is I interviewed a women's studies professor who I had been in her class previously. And I interviewed her, and it was a great interview. And again, this was strictly journalism. There's no opinion by me whatsoever. It's not like what I do now. And when she heard where it was going to be published and she heard it was going to be what she considered to be a right-wing newspaper, she was very upset. She didn't want me to publish it at all just because of where it was going. And again, this is the Las Vegas Review-Journal. This isn't some small paper. This is the biggest newspaper in Nevada, but she didn't like it. And I decided I'm not going to play dead, and I believe in what I did, and I did the right thing, and I'm going to go ahead and publish it.
And then there it started, right?
There it started. That was journalism, though, and I studied journalism, but it's very different from what I do now, which is opinion-based commentary, and I'm proud of that.
And some of that started with your first job at the One American News Network, which was about as different a first job as anybody would have. You go in at 21 years old, hoping to be an intern, and you end up with your own show? How does that happen?
I started at UNLV doing a political roundtable show called The Scramble. So I had some knowledge in what I was doing and hosting, and I produced that show myself. I got the panelists myself. I largely built that show on my own, so I had some experience.
I did that at USC. They didn't offer me a show right out of college.
Well, I knocked down the doors. But I mean, I think that you can attest to this as well. If you want to get where you want to be in life, you really have to be persistent and you have to knock down the doors. And that's what I did. And of course, I knew coming out of college and being 21 years old, I knew that I wasn't going to get a job at Fox News. I mean, I was realistic about it. In fact, I applied for an internship at The Blaze and was rejected. And so I found another.
Blaze, owned by Glenn Beck.
Yes, yeah. Who is a favorite character in this book,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, we'll get to that.
But I found this conservative news network called One American News that was a startup, and I like to be involved in things that are starting up. And I thought, what better way to enter than in a conservative news network that is maybe an alternative to Fox News or trying to be somewhat like Fox News? That's a great place for me to start. And I ended up going in, and I intended to be an intern, and I did a screen test, and I started talking to the owner about politics, and he had seen what I had done at UNLV, and he chose to take a shot with me. And that's what happens when you interview with an 80-year-old man who starts a network, and really it's a passion project. And he saw I had passion, and there it happened.
And so you grew that, and you grew this huge sort of online base, right, of people with your final thoughts that became huge. And then you end up going to The Blaze, eventually getting a job there, and become this big sensation for Glenn Beck. And then you didn't exactly follow the party line, especially when it comes to abortion rights, and then that didn't end well.
Yeah, I went on that little show called The View.
Yeah.
And I expressed my belief that I've had and have expressed prior to being on The View, in fact, in a New York Times profile, to be exact, that I am pro-choice because I believe in limited government. And again, you and I have talked about this before, and this is an issue that conservatives really don't like that I speak about. But to me, conservatism is about maximizing freedom. I believe in personally being pro-life, but I believe in being pro-choice from a limited government perspective. And I expressed that on The View. And that was a Friday, and I went in to do my regular one-hour show on Monday, only to get a call saying, don't come in, your show is suspended indefinitely, you offended the community, don't come near the building. Oh, and by the way, Glenn Beck and friends have been on radio all morning long telling everyone you're not a conservative, you're a fraud, you're disgusting, they hate you, you're a baby killer. oh, but by the way, you can't say anything. So you just can go away for a while, find something else to do, and we'll just continue to disparage you. Eh, no, not so much.
So at the start of the book, this is what it says. To my mom and dad for teaching me what's worth fighting for, to Brandon, who is your fiance now, for loving me through it all, and to Glenn Beck, I forgive you. Was that serious? Was that tongue-in-cheek? Was that, what was that?
A little bit of both. So I write about it a lot in the book, but my intention in the book when writing about my experience with the Blaze was not to get revenge against Glenn Beck. It wasn't to disparage Glenn Beck. I tell the truth, but for me it was more about showing people, especially women, that if you have an issue personally, professionally, politically, and especially in the workplace, and you feel like you're outspent, you're outnumbered, that someone else has got far more influence and power than you are, don't be afraid to challenge it. And that's what I did. And for me, it was important because I knew that there were other people working alongside me who had other issues with the network, with our boss, who were too afraid to say anything. And I thought, if I need to be the one that, because I'm in this situation, says, I'm going to stand up and say, the emperor has no clothes, this is BS, and I'm going to fight this, maybe other people, not only at that network, but others in that similar situation might find some inspiration behind that as well.
By the way, what was it like behind the scenes at The View?
Oh, The View? It was great. I didn't have any issues. In fact, one of the things I talk about in the book, I will never disparage people who are genuinely kind to me. And they were genuinely kind to me. Now, Whoopi wasn't there. She has Fridays off, so that was just happened to be the way it worked. But after the show, we waited a long time because there were people outside and we wanted to let them leave before I exited. So we spent maybe an hour in the dressing room. Joy Behar waited for a whole hour for me to come out of the dressing room to say, hey, I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on the show. And I think you're genuinely intelligent and care about what you're talking about. Mm. That meant a lot to me because we disagree on almost everything. We've publicly kind of sparred. They've talked about me on The View since then in not such a great way. But at the end of the day, she was kind to me, and I will never say anything bad about her as a person or Chelsea Handler or Bill Maher as a person because they were all kind to me.
Yeah. And then you end up on Fox Nation, which is this streaming service. Any concerns about going behind a paywall? Because this is something where you pay for the content. So much of your thing was sharing your content out for free.
Yeah, no, that's always the challenge. So I joined Fox News because I knew Fox Nation was coming. For me, when I was having discussions with Fox, it was all about what are we going to do to increase our digital presence? Because I knew that that's where I could really offer something. I feel like I blazed a trail, and I hate even using the word blazed, but I blazed a trail in conservative commentary online in a much different way than conservatives were delivering content prior to what I did in the viral sense, not just one viral video, but nightly viral videos. And so I knew I wanted to bring that to Fox News. And they just told me that they were starting this platform that was basically the Netflix of conservative television. And I thought this is a great way for me to get in. Again, I'd like to start something from the ground up. And yes, being behind a paywall is challenging. But the one thing I will say about Fox News is we have a following, unlike followings of any other cable news network. We have fans and we have followers and supporters who believe in the brand, and they're willing to break through that paywall. It's not always easy, but we're building it.
And one of your followers and fans ended up reaching out to you in social media, and now you're engaged.
Right? Well, you know, I think it's fair to say I ignored him on social media because I never saw the DM. When I say I don't check my notifications, I'm serious. I really don't. So
Brandon, who is your fiancé now, first reached out to you via social media. And then you guys ended up getting together in the real world at some point.
Right. No, we ended up meeting, and I had no idea that he had DM'd me. In fact, it wasn't until we were actually starting to date that he said, by the way, I DM'd you the day you got fired. And it's so embarrassing now, because when we met, he wasn't even following me on Instagram or Twitter, something I took very personally, by the way. But something, you know,
did
I appreciate.
Did he stop following you because you didn't respond to him?
I don't know what it was. He said it was just, you know, he thought I was engaged at the time. My previous boyfriend was a Navy SEAL and he thought I was engaged. So whatever, he's got his own story to that.
Yeah.
But when I met him, we started talking about politics and I realized that we share a lot of the same values and we appreciate the same values, the same politics. And so that's where it all kind of started.
When did you know he was the one?
Well, actually, when I first met him, I didn't really take him seriously because I asked him about his 5-year plan and he told me he wanted to run for Congress or be president. And I'm thinking, oh, you too? That's such a cliche thing to say to Tommy Larenas. Yes, yeah. I want to run for president. And like, yes, you and every other guy I meet. But we sat down and had a conversation, and he was telling me how he calls his local congressmen, his local senators. He calls city council. He calls about the homeless encampments on the side of the interstate. And so I started to realize, no, he really does care about these things like I care about these things. And that made an impact on me because I think passion and shared values are really important.
So it was. You kind of bonded over politics.
We did, but not just politics, because everybody can talk about politics, but it's he was willing to do something about it, and he was genuine. And that means a lot to me, because I really do believe in the things that I say. And, you know, beyond that, he's much different than I am. He keeps it very mellow. I'm always at a 10, so he helps mellow me out.
And he does respond to my tweets, so I've never met him, but I'm appreciative of that. So thank you for that. One thing you write about in the book, which also was written about in the New York Post, was his best friend growing up was Jordan Rogers, Aaron Rogers' brother, who ended up on The Bachelor, ended up with JoJo on The Bachelor, winning that. We see them now. They have a new show coming up on CNBC. And you write about the fact that she was embarrassed to be seen in public with you and how hurtful that was for you. How did you sort of work through that mentally, emotionally? How did you work through that with him?
Well, I'll take you back to the time when this all went down. And he doesn't like it when I talk about it because it's still a very sore subject. But I write about it in the book because it's the truth and people need to hear it. And I'm not going to back down from that. But this came on the heels of having water thrown at me in Minnesota when I'm with my family. So let's take my mindset back to that. The week prior, having water thrown at you and then that exploding and going viral. Not the best. And then after that, a series of incidents followed where people were trying to recreate that. So they would kick me at bars. They would try to trip me at bars. They would shout at me at bars or wherever they were. And then finding out, oh, by the way, my best friend's fiance refuses to be seen in public with you. That hurt.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I'm a person. You don't have to sign on or co-sign my beliefs. You don't have to take a picture with me and put it on Instagram, but just the notion of even being seen with me was just intolerable, insufferable. And, you know, that's hurtful because I wasn't even given a chance.
So are they coming to the wedding?
you know, that's an ongoing discussion, actually. Brandon and I fight about very few things, and I wouldn't even call it a fight, but it's, you know, it's a sore spot. It's something we have to get through and get over, and I'm willing to do that. I think that all things can be mended and repaired. And
so one of the things that people say about you, and I'm sure people will say about this when we post this, is Tommy Lahren is a racist. How do you respond to that?
I don't. I don't even give any credence to it whatsoever. I know who I am. I know who I'm not. And so that's just something that Trump supporters have had to deal with since prior to the election. It's constantly, if you're a Trump supporter, if you're a conservative, if you speak out on issues that conservatives are not supposed to speak out on, you're automatically labeled a Nazi, a white supremacist, a bigot, all these things. And to me, that cheapens the argument. If you're just going to call me a racist and you're not speaking to what I'm saying, a policy position, then you're just throwing a name at me, and names really don't bother me. They bounce off of me.
Is there anything that you've said in the past that you sort of regret or you wish, I wish I could have that one back?
Two things. One was a tweet that I deleted that everyone refers to. Even now when they write articles about me, they still refer to the tweet that I deleted in July of 2016 after the Dallas massacre. So I'm not going to repeat it because I don't repeat negatives. But I was very upset about what happened at a Black Lives Matter protest in the city of Dallas that I was living in. And, you know, I saw five officers being gunned down. And I was very passionate and I was mad as hell, to be honest. And so I tweeted something that, in hindsight, I shouldn't have tweeted because it needed more explanation. So I deleted it because I saw that my point wasn't getting across. People were taking it the wrong way, much like some of the things that Trump tweets, taken the wrong way. So I deleted it. And then, you know, Fox doesn't like when I talk about it, but last year after the State of the Union and the response to the State of the Union, I had some colorful words to say about Joe Kennedy III on Instagram that I wish I could take back because they just weren't professional. But those are really the only two things that I feel like I've said that I truly don't mean or I shouldn't have said.
So what's next for you? You wrote this book, you do speaking, you're on Fox Nation. Sort of what you said, talk to Brandon about his 5-year plan. What's your 5-year plan?
I don't like to make 5-year plans because because for men, you got to vet them. And first of all, I was kind of messing with him initially. It's because you never know. And I'm sure you feel like this too. When you're on TV sometimes, you have to figure out why people are around you.
Yeah.
And you have to say, ask probing questions because you don't know why they're there. So for me, my 5-year plan, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to work really hard at doing what I'm doing, and we'll see what's next. But I know in the theme of this book, I know my value. I know what my price tag is. I know that I'm never going to play dead. And I know that freedom beyond anything is what's most important to me. So that's where I'm headed in 5 years. And then obviously I'll be married and we'll hopefully still in Los Angeles. We'll see if we can turn the state around. That's a big goal of ours. And we're going to do it in some fun and exciting ways that I can't share yet. But that's my goal. Let's work on California.
Maybe he's going to run for Congress. Who knows? Anything else you want to add before we wrap things up?
I think one of the things, and you see it when you tweet anything with me in it, that I find frustrating, and I'm sure you do as well. I think we need to learn how to separate people from politics and understand that people have a different point of view. I mean, earlier on the show today, with somebody who probably we disagree on almost everything politically, but we were able to have a great conversation.
This is Lisa Bloom.
Yeah, Lisa Bloom, and she's great as a person, and we could probably go and have lunch together and talk about Taylor Swift and talk about clothes and shoes and California and all the things together and not even talk about politics. Or maybe if we did, we could just say we agree to disagree. And I think that's where we need to get back to in this country is we need to understand that you can be passionate and spirited and care about things, but that's not a reflection on your character as a person, and we shouldn't let it be that way. The worst thing I think we can do, especially as conservatives, is exist in this echo chamber where we're only friends with people who think like us. That's limiting, and I don't think it's very fun.
Well, and that is literally the point of the issue is to try to bring different groups of people together, to try to get out of the echo chambers and to have a civil conversation. So we appreciate you for helping to do that and appearing on our show. We thank you for being on the podcast. For that conversation with Tommy and Lisa, that's a separate podcast that you can download right now as well, which is going to be interesting to listen to, the Tommy and Lisa debate. And thank you for listening to this. Again, the book is called Never Play Dead, How the Truth Makes You Unstoppable. It's available in bookstores everywhere. It's available as an audiobook, if that's what you're interested in. She voices the audiobook herself. And you can listen and watch Tommy's daily, twice daily commentaries on Fox Nation as well. Tommy Lahren, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Issue Is podcast. Please subscribe. Please rate us. Please share this out to your friends. Let people know about it. And check out some of our other podcasts. A lot of really interesting conversations we've had as well. Thanks for listening.